Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Welcome to the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'm your host, William Liu of Yahoo Sports Canada. And on this week's episode of the Raptors Recap, I have Harrison Sanford, co-host of Inside the Green Room, for some crossover content. What's up?
Nothing much, man. Just excited for game four tonight. Also very excited about the weather here in Toronto. I am enjoying it very much so.
You're finally seeing it.
I'm finally seeing it. They were missed that it was coming. At certain points, I didn't believe. But no, it's good. I'm enjoying my time.
Yeah. First off, as one of the insecure Canadians, we got to ask you, like, how's your experience been of Toronto and things like this and this?
No, I love the city, man. The diversity is great. Being from New York, I could appreciate that very much so. I'm starting to learn my way around town a little bit, so that's good.
Yeah.
The only thing that gets me a little ticked off with Toronto are some of the fans of the Raptors.
Really? Okay, well, explain.
I'm a big believer in speaking things into fruition.
Oh, no, we don't do that. We do the opposite here, man.
I can
see that.
Okay. Yeah, the optimistic point of view, and I understand that there's a history that can prevent the optimistic point of view. But sometimes it's unnerving. And then, obviously, game three of the Eastern Conference Finals, I would have assumed that people would be in their seats well before tip-off, and that was not the case. So I know there's hardcore Raptors fans out there. If they have to jack some people who have tickets, go ahead and do it.
I'm telling you, if that mob outside Jurassic Park decides to swarm the arena, that'd be a net positive.
Yep, yeah. Exactly. I was on the verge of tweeting, if you're one of those fans that are in Scotiabank Arena for Instagram posts, then please just take your picture inside and then come outside, give it to somebody who's actually going to cheer and not leave before the second overtime.
That was actually surprising because that game started early too, and it was a long weekend here. So what are you leaving early for?
It made no sense.
Like, you're leaving at 9:30 for what? Like, you know, so
it made no sense.
No, they missed out. They missed out on Kawhi and stuff like that. But no, I'm happy that you're settled into Toronto, man.
Loving the city.
It's good because, you know, anytime we have people from out of town, we're always like, just wait until the summertime. And like this year especially, it's just been like, you like really had to wait because it was like 3 degrees. I mean, we're talking Celsius, like 3 degrees, like early May. And every time I was on the road, I was thinking like, yo, I can't. I'm just happy Kawhi's on the road with some better weather and stuff like that, you know. So, all right, let's talk. Let's go back to game three.
Let's do it.
I think sort of throughout the series, I didn't actually think the Raptors' defense could be that effective, but I thought in game three in particular, they were just stellar all over the place. And if you look at through three games right now, the Bucks, in terms of just half court possessions, I think they've had like a lot of second chance points, fast break, but strictly speaking, half court, Bucks are scoring 0.80 points per half court possession, which is like phenomenal number. If you can do that, you should be able to win most games, right? The Raptors being down 2-1 is a little bit unfortunate in that case, but I mean, what have you seen out of the Raptors defense sort of all season, but especially in the playoffs when they've taken to this other gear?
Well, I think they have two dynamic defensive players, obviously, in Siakam and obviously Kawhi Leonard.
Yeah.
And then you have three intelligent guys in Mark, Danny, Kyle. I think in this series, too, especially if you look at the starting lineup, I know Danny and Kyle get some flack sometimes, but their ability to not be posted, their strength. Remember we look back at the 76ers series and you said to yourself, why isn't Mark posting up Tobias Harris? And, you know, when he did, it was okay. It wasn't great. But if you look at this series, you say, all right, well, Danny's guarding Mirotić. Once in a while, if the half-court offense doesn't go well, just put Mirotić in the post. Now, granted, Mirotić is not a Hall of Fame back, but simple height to dictate an easy bucket from time to time. Same thing with Kyle Lowry. Their inability to get posted or be taken advantage of because of their size in certain occasions allows them to do unique things like put Siakam on Bledsoe that we saw in Game 3. And obviously Kawhi is just a mammoth.
I mean,
in size, in strength, in everything. So you have that combination defensively. I've said this from halfway through the season. I really started to believe it. They're the best defensive starting five in the NBA. Now, can that translate to other things? Is the offense going to get back to that peak level that we saw at one point where the ball was moving around? But defensively, their capabilities are best in the NBA, hands down.
Yeah, for sure. And if you look at Game 3 in particular, right, that defensive coverage against Giannis. First off, the move by Nick Nurse to switch Kawhi onto guarding Giannis. I think, obviously, in an ideal world, you tell Pascal, like, listen, buddy, we're going to send you help. But, you know, good luck.
Yep.
Really just try to handle that man. And it just, like, realistically, it wasn't really working. And I think, like, Game 2, there was that one point where Pascal had fouled out of the game, first off. So that's pretty bad.
That's not good.
But then also he had zero defensive rebounds, and Giannis was getting on the offensive glass so much and just being such a force. Like, the first play of the game, he drives on Siakam, gets his own rebound, dunks it. And I'm like, this is not going to go well.
Pumps his chest right after, too.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And so, you know, like, okay, so you get a little desperate. You turn to, you know, the ace in the hole, and that's Kawhi. It's a great option to turn to. But, I mean, just, you know, even though I would love to give all the credit to Kawhi, when you look over the film and stuff, it's a great team effort by the Raptors. I think Marc Gasol, with his size, and he's got really smart hands.
Yep.
I think in the regular season, he kind of got called for a couple of, like, lazy swipes, and I'm thinking, like, this is just laziness. But really, what we've seen throughout the playoffs, like, he's got great hands to force turnovers and stuff. And Giannis overall shooting 5 of 16 in Game 3, 8 turnovers, fouling out. Like, he's going to bounce back better from that.
For sure.
But I think Raptors defensively – I mean, this is the toughest defense that Giannis will pretty much ever face.
Yeah, no, it's special. And if you even look back to the 76ers series, the Raptors thought that they can get away with Siakam on Jimmy Butler because of his physical attributes. But at the same time, what happened in Game 7? They put Kawhi on him.
Yep.
And when there's desperate times, you have to go with your best defender. And the thing with Kawhi, if he was guarding, or if Siakam is on Giannis, then Kawhi's guarding Middleton, then Kawhi can't help because you're not trying to leave Middleton open.
That's true.
But if you have Siakam on somebody like Eric Bledsoe, who's only hit 2 3-pointers, I think, in this series so far.
That sounds generous, to be honest.
Yeah, right?
He's been kind of a train wreck. Low key.
He hit a garbage time one, I think, in Game 2. I don't even remember, but I know he hasn't been shooting the three well.
No.
So if you have Siakam able to help off of that, and you could just have other guys help depending on the situation, it helps them a lot. Obviously, Giannis is a beast, but Kawhi is a beast himself too. And the fact that Giannis was hesitating on what he wanted to do, granted, his footwork is spectacular.
That's
one way to put it. It's still, that hesitation means a lot because as much as the Raptors' offense revolves around the impact of Kawhi Leonard, same thing could be said for the Bucks. If Giannis isn't playing at peak levels, it really changes how they operate and their ability to play at their best.
Yeah, for sure. And, like, you know, NBA.com does enough now, which is great. Like, you can actually see, like, defensive matchups, right? Mm-hmm. Who guarded who for how many possessions and stuff. Kawhi took 41 defensive possessions against Giannis, which is actually less than Pascal. So even though he got the primary assignment, like, I think just because the way the Bucks are trying to force switches and stuff like that, like, Pascal actually ended up on him more. But specifically in those 41 possessions against Kawhi, he shot 2 of 12 from the field. And, like, that's just an incredible mark. And I think one of the underrated things about Kawhi is, like, he's so strong. Like, that's the one thing that Pascal doesn't have yet. He's still, like, he can still push him around a little bit.
Yep.
And Giannis can definitely push him around a little bit. Like, you just, you know, just, it's not the same. Like, and if you force Giannis, like, even just a step more away from the basket, like, that's a big difference because he's pretty much only shooting in the rim. So if you can, like, push him out further, it's better. If you can be a little bit stronger so you're not just, like, pushed under the rim, then you give time for the help defense to come. Like, you're right, man. Kawhi's been incredible there. I think Mark, too, like, Games 1 and 3 particularly.
Yep.
Like, Game 2, he was bad. Yep. But game one, especially that first half, he was great on defense. And I thought throughout all of Game 3, Mark's defense was great. But the toughest thing with Milwaukee is, like, they put so much pressure on the rim, but they also take, like, literally 40 threes a game.
Yep.
So far, the Bucks, haven't even shot better than 32% from three. Are you concerned about that number, or are you looking at the number as the Raptors' defense has been doing really well in terms of contesting shots?
No, I'm not worried about that number. I think it could stay around that. Maybe some games even get worse, because if you think about it, there's been a lot of open shots for the guys who are really good shooters, like Malcolm Brogdon, who this year became a 50-40-90 guy.
He's good. They should pay him.
Yeah. He's scary. Yeah. And then somebody like George Hill's gotten – I think particularly there was an open three in the corner that he got in one of the overtimes in game three.
I think it was Giannis missed two free throws, but then they somehow kicked it out.
Yep.
Which was just such a kick in the balls, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yep. You got to locate – like, certain shooters have to be located a bit better, Brogdon being one of those. And, yeah, maybe Mirotić starts hitting more. But the game two, Brogdon got a lot of open ones, and I think the Raptors got caught off guard by how bold the Bucks are in shooting the three sometimes. Like, Brogdon, it flicks off his wrist so fast.
Yeah.
And even though Middleton shot a crazy attempt to try and take the Raptors' heart.
Yo, Chris Middleton, he thought he was KD in that moment.
Yeah, but it was it does resemble or symbolize the exuberance they have in shooting the three. Yep. And I think the Raptors, as the series continues to go on, they'll be more ready for that. You got to stay locked in on Brogdon. Mm-hmm. You got to stay locked in on George Hill.
Yep.
And if a guy like Eric Bledsoe hits four threes in a game, you shake his hand, say good game, move on to the next one.
Yeah, that's true. And again, if you like, I'm basically a nerd with the numbers right now, because I had like 2 hours to just like look over the stuff for the podcast. But Raptors contested 34 of 44 threes in game three. And then I went back and looked at the actual attempts. Like, obviously, Giannis's three threes all open. And then for Bledsoe, he got like depends on how you want to define how it can contest, but it's like at least 4 of 6.
Yep.
And then there's those two Hill threes. Like, everything else was really well contested. And the one other thing I thought watching the game was like, I think Mark was first off, I think pride just kicked in, right? He's too accomplished of a guy to just be like, oh, I played like shit. I'm just going to do like the same thing next game. Like, no, he was going to bounce back in a big way. And I think you guys were talking about that in the postgame show too. Like, he's too good.
Yeah, no way. And he's got some money on the line too.
Yeah, he's got some money on the line too. But I mean, like, the way he was like closing out, like flying and closing out. And I'm just thinking, like, I didn't even know this man could jump, let alone like fly out at a shooter. But he was like running guys off the line, like Mirotić, Ilyasova, Brook. Like, those guys, you know, they're not in the paint much. So I mean, I think Mark's defense there was good, and I think the Raptors as a whole, like, it's just. Like, the way they rotate, the way they defend, I thought in game three is particularly, like, they aggressively doubled Giannis most of the time. Mm-hmm. But they even doubled guys like Middleton occasionally just to see if the Bucks can pass out of it. And the Bucks had 20 turnovers. And a lot of that was just the Raptors are very disciplined in, you know, in terms of their defensive IQ, right? It's all there, and they're all bought in. And when that happens, you actually have a defense that's good enough to guard the Bucks at the rim and contest threes. And, like, at that point, if you can get some defensive rebounds and just play better offense, you're not, you know, getting transition points. Like, that's the game plan for the Raptors to win the series.
Yep, you got to keep them out of transition, because that's the one time where it's this because of the cross matching that's going on and their ability to hit transition threes, it can get hectic. But in that half court, you're right. I mean, Mark was great in game three, and we've seen, you know, it's kind of something similar to with the Raptors. How many players on the Bucks are going to put it on the floor? Mirotić is not going to put it on the floor. Ilyasova is not really going to put it on the floor. No. Go ahead and sell out on the three. If they hit it or if they go by you, we'll see what their playmaking is going to turn into for somebody like Ilyasova or Mirotić. That's fine. But the threes, getting back to that point, I don't think they'll be able to shoot well if the Raptors play defensively with a high level of IQ, especially on the road. Now, maybe there's that one home game where they go absolutely nutty.
I'm expecting that in game five. I'm not going to lie.
But at home, hopefully, if it's game five, 2-2, there's so much pressure on the Bucks.
Yeah.
So much pressure. But they obviously got to do the job in game four.
Yeah, for sure. Kawhi. let's talk about Kawhi first up. I mean, you've seen a lot of basketball in your lifetime. Have you seen in person, at least, Kawhi, a performance like Kawhi? It's like, aside from LeBron, I think we could put aside playoff LeBron. It's like its own.
It's his own entity.
And as a Raptors podcast, we're just gonna stop talking about LeBron and what he does in the playoffs. Okay. We'll talk about Kawhi, like, outside of LeBron. Like, have you seen in person a guy dominate a playoff run like this?
No, because I don't think there's been any guy that we've seen. I'm 32 years old now. I don't think. And I've been doing in the journalism field for about a little over a decade, I don't think there's anybody that we've seen who dominate offense and defense. That's the one thing. Like, Kawhi offensively, for the most part, he's been efficient. He really hasn't been as efficient as he was in the first three or four games of the 76ers series, but he's obviously still great offensively. And then defensively, he's shutting down whoever you want. Like, Jimmy Butler was held to 2 points at halftime of Game 7, if I remember correctly. And Giannis had a terrible Game 3. I mean, even though Ben Simmons is an easier person to guard than Jimmy Butler, he was dominant against him as well.
He had, like, multiple single-point performances, Ben Simmons is too good to score single digits.
Exactly. And I told some of my friends, he made Ben Simmons look like Ben Simmons was an all-star this year. He just looked like a starter, if that. And if he can make Giannis turn from MVP to just an all-star, then that level of depreciation on their value is huge, on top of the fact that he plays so well offensively. I mean, there's probably other guys who have better skill sets offensively in terms of, like, specifically playmaking ability,
which
is probably Kawhi's, like, last level of getting there.
He's got to get there.
But he's been special. And the crazy thing is, I know the coaching staff feels like he's still – got a lot better to get in terms of his athleticism.
Wow.
He still has another level to get, because this whole summer he was rehabbing. Wait till he actually gets a full summer to, like, actually train his body and not rehab his body. He's going to be even scarier. I mean, think about this. He was limping.
Right? Yeah, I was just going
to
say.
He's limping throughout Game 3, but yet he took off from, like, 1 foot inside the free throw line to dunk it on the Bucks in overtime.
I couldn't believe he went for that dunk. Especially because, like, the first shot he took was that little, like, transition play where he comes up, like, a little bit lame. And he's kind of, like, skipping down the floor. And it's like, I think they call timeout shortly thereafter. And, like, the whole time I'm watching him on the bench and he's, you know, I was just like, is he going to be okay? And then he comes back and he plays 52 minutes.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And my takeaway from after the game was just like, you know, all the other players were tired or they fouled out. And here comes Kawhi, who, like, turns it on another physical gear. Like, yeah, the jumper wasn't going great for him throughout the game. But, like, just him, you know, ripping the ball away from that one possession where he, like, he helps on Middleton.
The Brogdon steal.
Then he goes back on the perimeter. It's a loose ball. Like, Brogdon actually gets the first hand on it, but Kawhi just goes straight through him.
Yep.
Gets the ball, controls the ball, too, because his hands are so big.
Yep.
And then he goes in for a dunk. And then the play after that where he's just, like, he drives on Brogdon. Like, there was a double team by Middleton, so he backs it back out to the free throw line.
Yep.
And then he's just, like,
bodies him.
I'll body you, and I'll just go to the rim. And it's just, like, it's such a special player.
Yep.
That we're watching. My only concern is, are the Raptors putting too much on Kawhi's plate? Or is there such a thing?
I don't know if it's too much. It might be adequate amount, but there is definitely some things that can make it easier for him. More dribble handoffs initiated from Marcus Gasol on the high post would be one of them.
Mm-hmm.
I still would like to see, even if it's not going to Kawhi, I would still like to see Kyle get off of that and maybe shoot his, like, long range three, or Danny do the same thing, since Brook Lopez is going to sit back and not really pressure Mark. I would love to see more actions for Siakam. And I would also love if Kawhi would be in the post a little bit more.
Yeah.
As opposed to the top of the key. So he doesn't have to try and dissect the whole offense from that angle. And you saw that, I think it was maybe the third or fourth quarter, you started to see him get it more on the wing. But obviously all those things can help. And, yeah, they can get more help if some guys would just hit shots. Hopefully that happens.
Yeah, for real. Because that's the only thing with Kawhi, like, in terms of playmaking and stuff. Like, I don't even fully knock him for not getting a lot of assists, because, like, multiple times he'll just kick out and guys will miss. Mm-hmm. And, like, that's kind of the nature of the Raptors. Like, I just think that, like, in terms of pure shooters, right, like, Danny's a pure shooter.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, after that, like, Mark is a capable shooter. Kyle is a streaky shooter.
Yep.
Pascal is, like, a situational shooter. Like, he's only shooting from certain positions.
Yep.
And then everyone else is like, I don't know. Like, Serge, I wouldn't even really call Serge a shooter.
He's money from the mid-range, but he hasn't been getting a lot of those this series.
That's true. And the Bucks are smart about that. Yep. Like, they actually, like, if they run, like, that little pick-and-roll action with Fred and Serge, he's usually the two of them coming off the bench. Like, if they run that, like, whoever is in the corner is helping off that in that moment to, like, even take away that Serge mid-range shot. And that's the difference between regular season and playoffs.
Yep.
Like, regular season, no one would ever do that.
Yep.
You're just like, my guy's in the corner, I'm going to stick with him. Exactly. I've done my job defensively. In the playoffs, it's different, right? But, I mean, yeah, the only thing with Kawhi, I'm just a little bit concerned because, like, again, the workload's so big and we've seen him sort of come up a little bit physically. I don't know. I mean, he just looked pain. Like, he didn't play pain, but he looked pain to me. And it's just, you know, I don't want to, you know, wear him out or anything, but I mean, realistically, what other options does Raptors have?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, for sure.
You just got to ride your superstar and have him deliver. And I think, like, again, like, speaking from a Raptors fan perspective, right, like, there's been a lot of, like, just, like, shortcomings in the playoffs, and we've seen a lot of players, like, star players even, like, go into the playoffs and they're like, their level drops off and the game's too difficult for them. Like, it happened to Kyle many times. It's happened to DeMar many, many times.
Mm-hmm.
To see a guy who elevates his game, and like, he already has, Kawhi already has like 11 of the Raptors, like, top, like, 30 something scoring games.
Yeah, he's special,
he hasn't even played that many games. Like, 11 games is a lot of games.
Yeah.
Like, outside the game, he was sick in Orlando, game three. Like he's been, like, sensational in every one of those performances. And, like, already, like, he gives us the bounce,
mm-hmm.
right? Which is one of the craziest shots I've ever seen. He gives you the 45 points in game one against Philadelphia, which was just an evisceration against mm-hmm. a really good defense. The game winner in game four on the road in Philly. Step special. Back over Joel Embiid.
He's got so many moments.
Crazy. And then this double overtime where he's just, like, coming up with literally every single play. Like, he's winning jump balls against Giannis. It's like, this is just insane.
You didn't even mention the crossover that dropped.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The crossover that drops two guys, man.
Yeah, he's had that mural that he has up now. Like, it's almost unfair that it only signifies one moment because there's been way too many.
That's right. There's only so many buildings in Toronto.
Yeah,
you know?
There you go.
They should all have something on them right now.
But even, I think part of the reason, though, that Kawhi's been so good, and this is thankfully to his human nature and to his upbringing with the Spurs, as he's said multiple times, he never gets too high, never gets too low, goes back and just does the work. When you have a guy like Tim Duncan, like, influencing the way your work habits, a guy like Greg Popovich coaching you,
mm-hmm.
you win one game, okay, cool.
Yeah.
You didn't win the series yet.
Yeah.
You know, and that, it's so hard for players, it's a very, it's a superstar league, and guys can get caught up in their egos and things of that nature. So if they have a great game, how could you not go check out your Instagram, see how many likes you got? Why not check out your Twitter mentions?
Yeah.
But he's so even keel and doesn't really care too much. He just cares about being great mm-hmm. and not the perception of being great. He just wants to be great himself. And I think that helps him come back game after game and put out the work that he's been saving himself for by load managing. But
hey, man, listen, load management after this season is going to take off. I know the league already hates it and everything, but how can you argue with the
results?
How
can you argue with it?
And, like, going to the point about Kawhi's mentality, like, I just think it's been really enjoyable as a Raptors fan because, like, you understand from the fan base now that you're here, like, it's a very worrisome fan base. Mm-hmm. Like, as soon as something goes wrong, like, it just, like, there's tension in the building and everyone's sort of freaked out. To have a guy who, like, after he hits that game winner, like, the next time he talks to the press, he's like, look, man, I'm over it. Like, I enjoyed it with my family that night at dinner, and that's it.
Yep.
I'm over it. I'm going to go to the next series. And people were trying to, like, tease him and talk about, like, talk about that moment. He just wouldn't give any quotes. And then, like, after they get spanked in game two against the Bucks, they're asking him, like, what do you do from now? And he's like, going to Toronto for game three. Like, what I mean? Like, the same mentality. Yep. That's what they mean, the same mentality.
It's a beautiful thing to have, especially, you're right, with the fan base, the way it can get sometimes. Having somebody like Kawhi who's mm-hmm. even keeled to a T has to have a positive impact on the fan base. And maybe if they tie it up tonight, maybe it would really start to seep through the cognitive, ways of Raptors fans.
I'm like, Toronto as a city, like, every Drake song is, like, pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of moping
mm-hmm.
and, like, woe is me kind of shit. And then, like, after one win, it's trophies. You know what I mean? Like, it's like that. Like, if Drake's emotional, like, gambit is the same as Toronto. Like,
yeah.
That's why people kind of identify with it.
I'm understanding.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's talk about Mark and Pascal. So I feel like those two guys are the big swing guys in terms of just, like, first off, they shouldn't be swing guys. Like, throughout mm-hmm. the regular season, I thought they were, at least Pascal was way more consistent. Mark was, generally speaking, pretty good from game to game. In the playoffs, we've seen, like, those two of them kind of vary. And in this series particularly, like, I don't think games one and two were forgettable for both those guys. But game three, they were much better. For Mark, is there anything the Raptors can do to, like, get him easier looks offensively? And just get him into the mentality of scoring. Because I thought in game three, when he came out, he hit those two jumpers, he hit that little mid-range jumper.
Yep.
Then the Bucks started closing down on him, and then he started being able to, actually make plays by driving against guys or going to the post and stuff.
Yep.
And it just changed everything for him. Like, is there some way the Raptors can get him to have that mentality from the get-go?
I think sometimes maybe there's coming down from Coach Nurse. Maybe they have to call plays for him. For the most part, Mark doesn't Mark doesn't really have plays necessarily called for him to score. Right. They have calls for him to play make, but he doesn't really have plays for him to score. I think, I don't know if he could start at the beginning of the game, but if you look at the substitution pattern, when they take out Brook, Ersan Ilyasova comes in the game.
Yeah.
And that would seem as immediate time to put Mark in the post. And I think we saw that in the first quarter of game three.
Yeah.
He called for it. Like, it was weird because when Mark gets the ball in the post, it's usually somebody telling him to get there or he's accidentally there. But he actually called for it. It was off an inbounds play, and that was encouraging. So it's going to, again, as I said with some of the guys before, after game two, sometimes you need to get humbled in order for that beast inside of you to come out.
Right.
And, you know, speaking to some of the guys, and I said, why didn't Mark post? And the question was, why? You tell me. It's sometimes it's just on the player. And if you don't want it, they're not going to give it to you because you have a guy like Kawhi who's like, okay, I'm ready to score. You have a guy like Siakam who's very opportunistic when it comes to scoring, which was very – which, you know, I applaud him for because he did that. There was one or two drives he had to get against Giannis in game three. Yeah. And I was you know, you're shocked because it's Giannis.
Yeah, yeah.
But you got to attack him.
You got to attack. Because, like, realistically, Giannis isn't trying to shut you down. He's really trying to, like,
contest.
That's it. Yep. And block your shot, really. Yep. But, like, he's not into you like a Ron Artest type, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. No, so I think in terms of Mark, it's just going to be a level of aggression for him. And then probably coming down from the coaching staff when they see a mismatch, just take advantage of it. And if it doesn't turn out to anything, at the very least, you know you put the defense on alert and you've activated Mark's scoring instincts.
Yeah, for sure.
And so, you know, maybe that helps. And in terms of Siakam, I do love what they did with him, taking him off of Giannis.
Yeah.
Because that could help him in various ways. One, energy. Two, being available, not fouling out.
Not fouling out. It helps.
And then three, you know, if he's not, we know where Giannis is going to be in the paint most of the time.
Yep.
If Siakam's guarding somebody else, he's on the perimeter, which would mean if a shot is missed, he should be able to run out.
Right.
And that's one thing that we saw in the regular season that we haven't seen a lot in the playoffs. Those let outs to Siakam were like, you felt like 4 to 6 points a game. That's how Siakam would score some of his points because Kyle would find him in the transition game. And you really haven't seen that too much of that in the playoffs. But hopefully that comes about now with the defensive matchup switched up. And obviously, you know, he wasn't good from the corners in game two, but he was, I think, with 2 of 4 or something like that in game three from the corner three. Like, yeah. Gets a couple of those, maybe a couple of mismatches in the post, maybe some like down cross screening action in like the different post areas so that he can get a smaller man on his back.
Yeah.
And he's more than confident to take it when he has like a Middleton behind him or even like a Mirotić in the corner.
Like he should cook those guys.
Yeah. The spin move hasn't been unveiled enough yet. I mean, in this series.
They know the spin move's coming. Right? That's also playoff basketball versus regular season basketball. Is like the way they're playing them now. Almost is like they're giving them the baseline drive. Like if you want to drive directly to the hoop, you can do it.
Yep.
But if you spin towards the middle, for your right hand. There's no way that's happening.
Yep.
I think with Pascal, like first off, I think throughout the playoffs, I've actually been really impressed with him just because this is his first playoff run as a starter in this role. He's never played like this. He never played this many minutes before. Mm-hmm. And even for a guy who's like an energizer bunny, like whatever, right? But like realistically, you got to be really tired. You got to really prepare your body to go this deep into the playoffs. And so I've been impressed from that perspective. And he's actually, scoring-wise, he's probably about like 20 points. Like sometimes it hasn't been efficient, but still 20 points is 20 points in the playoffs. Yep. But like I think this playoff run, especially like if you just look ahead to the future, like how Pascal can improve. I think Mark's what it is, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like how Pascal can improve, like
mid-range jumper would be great next year.
Mid-range jumper, just any sort of like above the break game. Like he's great in the corners.
Yep,
he's great driving on the baseline. He's very opportunistic, as you mentioned, with everything else. But like he does need more of that. You know, top of the key, like defense sagging off. What are you doing with that? You need something with that. And also just, like, recognizing double teams and playmaking and stuff, because I don't think he's ever faced double teams in his life, pretty much outside of college.
Yep.
Right? If anything, he's been the guy that's been ignored by the defense. And so it's, like, the complete opposite for him, and he just has to learn and adjust. And I don't think you can do that, like, on the fly. You have to really get some reps and really understand where the help is coming from and sort of just be more savvy with everything. But, you know, this is going to be very interesting. Like, I think Pascal actually has a lot to work on this summer after learning sort of what the toughest versions of defenses looks like. And that's why I'm kind of excited. I think Pascal's going to come back a lot better next year.
Yep. It's funny. My one of my favorite phrases is, in order to learn, you have to live.
Yeah.
And so
yeah,
he's
living.
Yeah. He's going to have to go through it. He's going to have to go through it. And then, you know, maybe the purchases on his P-Skills brand will even continue to go up because it's been on full display so far this playoffs. I can only imagine if he comes back better.
Who do you think got the best personal gear on the team? Just put you on the spot randomly. Because there's a couple of brands. I'll list them off, right?
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
The Bet on Yourself, Fred VanVleet stuff. Understand the Grind, the Norm.
Mm-hmm.
You got Pascal.
Mm-hmm.
Kawhi kind of has his own merch, but like really now he's mostly New Balance, so that doesn't really count.
Yep. His logo, by the way, is fire.
The Kawhi, the hand?
Do you know, I had to point this out to somebody the other day. You know what the hand is written in the hand?
Yeah, right? It says KL, right?
Yes.
Which is crazy.
Yes.
And it's a hand too.
Like, yeah, you got to look. If
great branding.
Some people don't like get it at first. They just think it's a hand, but if you like zoom in, you realize it is a K and an L, which is pretty...
That's pretty good.
This is a sick logo.
Am I missing anyone else?
I think that's it. Hands down, my favorite is Understand the Grind.
Yeah, I agree.
And part of the reason is because I was wearing some of Norm's gear walking down the street. I was in Yorkville maybe like 2 weeks ago. And this college student walked up to me. She says to me, "Can you stop right there? Can you take a picture?" And I'm thinking like, "Oh, you recognize me from the podcast? Like, I'm semi-famous?
You recognize my voice?"
Yeah, right? She was like, "No, I just like your shirt. I need that message as I go to the library." I was like, "Oh, okay." Wow. I was like, "Oh, damn, that's pretty cool."
Wow.
Saw her, I think 2 days later, walking down the same street. She's like, "I need to take a picture of this again. I'm going back to the library."
Jeez.
I told Norm this story, and he was like, "Encouraged." He was encouraged by
it. Send her some merch.
Yeah, I should send her some merch. I don't know her name. I'll walk down that same street maybe tomorrow or something. Maybe she'll find me again. But no, I think Understand the Grind, the messages. Oh, and you forgot Phil Hanley. I got the Be Your Own Goat wristband on me right now.
That's right.
Yes.
Phil Hanley on the Instagram comments.
Yeah.
Everyone needs a shooter on the team. I mean, you don't usually expect the shooter to be an assistant coach, but yeah. I mean, there's that famous story of Phil Hanley, like giving the 2016 Warriors a speech of like, "Yo, just, you know, you're better than this. You got to make a comeback." And
the Cavs.
The Cavs. So
I love Phil. He's the homie.
Yeah, he seems great.
Yeah, Phil's the homie. But were we talking about Pascal? We're talking about the brand.
I was gonna say personally, Pascal, I would like to see him workshop that the logo a little bit.
Yeah,
I see what he's doing with the P and the S with the heart, but like it's just, you know, like, I love you, Pascal. I do. I love you, man. But
it's
like,
a heart, man.
He could rework that.
Okay.
He could rework that.
Can we talk about this real quick?
Yeah.
I really got annoyed because the NBA put out the candidates or nominees for Most Improved Player.
Yeah.
And it was D'Angelo Russell.
Yeah.
Which I'm okay with, but not fine with it because D'Angelo Russell was a former number two pick.
We expect.
But okay.
I
only thought it was okay because they also included De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah.
De'Aaron Fox just got drafted last year.
Seriously.
he just got drafted last year. He was a lottery pick. What was it? He was top five pick?
Top five pick,
I mean, of course the man improved, right?
Yeah, of course. If he just got drafted this year, you know what I mean? Like, might have won rookie of the year, to be honest.
It's out of control. Like, I know there's no specific criteria for it, but if a guy just got drafted last year and he made an improvement from what did you expect him to do? I mean, I love De'Aaron Fox's game. He was actually one of our first guests on the podcast, so shout out to him.
Oh, shit.
I linked up with him in Houston. But nonetheless, being drafted last year should not qualify you for the Most Improved Player Award. Now, granted, there's a lot of players who improved in different ways. Like Blake Griffin got a lot better this year.
Yeah, I like Blake.
Brooke Lopez, I don't know if he necessarily improved, but he changed.
Yeah, definitely changed.
So,
he changed positions, basically.
Exactly.
He's shooting guard now.
Exactly. So all those type of things, there's no specific criteria, but putting a guy who just got drafted last year in the lottery as a most improved nomination, that's a little it's out of hand for me.
Yeah. And, like, I'm sure people argue, like, "Oh, Pascal is only in his third year." Like, that's the same criteria. It's like, no. If you play an entirely different role from year to year because you have changed so much in terms of your abilities, that's improvement.
Exactly.
So D'Angelo Russell averaged more points this year. It's like,
still the same game.
He's the same game. Like, he made a couple more shots. And, like, I mean, De'Aaron Fox, he really did make a leap. Yeah. But again, like, this is his second year, right? Like, so
it's out of control. Like, Pascal's an actual three-point. He's somebody you can't leave open in the corner anymore. That's a significant improvement.
He's gone so good. Teams are putting Joel Embiid on him.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, last year he was just getting straight up ignored. Like, he was coming off the bench and stuff. So, yeah, I think, look, I honestly think Pascal is going to improve a lot more next year, too. Just because, again, like, this is all learning experience for him. And, like, you know, he's got his whole career out of him and stuff. Like, if he's ever going to be not even number one option, because I think that's, like, a little bit high for him, but mm-hmm. even a number two option, which I think is within the realm of possibility for him. And occasionally he plays that in this team. Like, he's going to have to get better at these other areas of the game. And I think, given his track record, he's going to improve these things. Yep. So I'm excited for that. Raptors bench throughout the playoffs. Not the strength of the team. No. I wouldn't say the strength of the team. However, I do look at Serge and Norm as guys who can make a big impact positively in this series. We saw Norm already. Game two, you know, had a pretty good game, 14 points. And then game three comes back even stronger, 19 points. You know, you were asking me at halftime, you were like, yo, what is up with Norm? Like, what's going on? Like, because we don't usually see this and stuff. And, like, all I told you was, like, this is what he does against the Bucks. But, like, you know, I think just Norm's activity and stuff and his scoring instinct off the bench. I mean, he should play a bigger role in the series because, again, like, most of the matchups favor Norm. Like, he can defend most of the wings.
Yep.
Right. Like, aside from Giannis and, like, Brook Lopez, like, Norm should be able to handle defensively against all those guys. And if he can hit a couple of shots and drive to the basket, which we know he can do, like, he should be a big impact player. And the same thing for Serge. Like, just, I think defensively, like, he is more suitable to play on the perimeter. Mm-hmm. But also, like, just his ability to actually, you know, Mark overthinks. He has the galaxy brain when it's like, oh, I'm on the perimeter. I should swing to the corner. It's like, no, shoot that ball. Serge is 100% always shooting that ball,
right? Ready to go.
I mean, what are you seeing from those guys? And can you count on them in this series?
I think with Norm, I don't know if we can count on 19 points again. It's not out of the realm of possibility, but the thing I do like about Norm is that if he is challenged on the three-point line, he could put the ball on the ground and attack the basket. Now, will it turn out that he'll have a high success rate at doing it? Maybe not.
Nope.
But the sheer ability for him to do it does open up other things for the Raptors in general. Yeah. So I'm excited for him in that sense. And let's face it, he should have some fresh legs because he did not play in that Sixers series for whatever reason.
That was strange, too. Like, why didn't he play in the Sixers series? Because the same matchup kind of issue presented itself then, too.
I don't. I wish I had that answer.
Yeah.
I guess, obviously, things were tight. And I think, obviously, Nick Nurse was just worried about getting bullied because the offensive rebounding
the
offensive rebounds that the Sixers were getting out of hand. They weren't even some of those games the Raptors were losing wasn't even they were getting outskilled. They were just getting outmanned, outbodied. And Norm you're right. These guys on the Bucks, they're a little bit more of his height. So you don't think he's going to get bodied and manhandled like maybe the coaching staff might have thought in that 76ers series. And then with Serge, I'm looking forward to hopefully him getting more opportunities offensively. And not just from the three-point line. He's pretty darn efficient in the paint.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like,
they just
never get him the ball there. I would love to see more duck-ins. I would love to see, like, more opportunities for him just instead of trying to trail for the three-point in transition, run straight to the basket and see what happens. There were times in that 76ers series I felt like he got the ball in the paint and he would score pretty efficiently. He just doesn't get enough touches there.
Yeah. And, like, look, Serge is not a difficult guy to, like, set up, right? Like, you know, in the Sixers series, like, they had a lot of success with those two big lineups where Serge would come across a little down screen on the baseline, away from the ball, post up, seal whoever it was, usually Tobias Harris, and Gasol feed him high-low, and he could just turn around and do that. And I don't see a reason why that couldn't be the same case here against the Bucks. I don't think ultimately you want to play big in the same way against the Bucks as you do against the Sixers because there's a lot more shooting on the floor. But, again, like, it's not hard to set up Serge. Like, and with Serge, so much is confidence, right? Yep. Like, you don't even got to get him that many good shots. You just got to get him one or two very easy, very makeable shots early in the game. And if he hits those shots, he's probably engaged the rest of the game. He's probably going to play well.
He's getting blocks. He's getting rebounds. Yeah. He's making hustle plays.
Yeah.
That's Serge.
And then if he misses those shots, then chances are Kendrick Perkins is on Twitter talking about, like, what's going on with you, Serge? Like, can you wake up, please?
Yo, Kendrick Perkins, as we speak about the bench, Kendrick Perkins is not a big fan of Fred VanVleet. He is not. He's calling in for Lynn.
Okay. All right.
Have you been watching Kendrick Perkins' tweets?
I
imitated some of his tweets the other day. I had too much fun doing it. Like, the way he tweets, like, you could hear him saying it. It's beautiful. That's how all Twitter should be.
I think that's how Twitter used to be. And then people got a little worried about
Yeah,
about being canceled and stuff. But no, Perk is perfect, man. He's great, and I like people who speak their mind too. So that's exactly what you want.
We got to bring Perk back up if the Raptors somehow make it to the finals. Yeah. We got to bring Perk back up here so he can meet Drake again.
Oh man, oh man.
I would love that. I would love that confrontation.
Yeah, Drake's gonna hide behind Baca again. But
he'll hide behind the Night King.
Yeah, yeah.
Kawhi.
Yeah, Kawhi's literally got to do everything. He's got to be. He's got to be Drake's bodyguard after this.
Oh goodness.
No, but seriously, if they can get those guys to perform, the Serge and Norm, like, that's it, right? Because, like, you look at the Bucks, like, they can bring guys off the bench and perform every game. And it's just really up to the Raptors to see, like, can these guys, come, like, just even come close to matching what they're getting out of. Like, they got 44 points out of Hill and Brogdon, which is wild.
Well, Brogdon's a starter, but yes, yeah, still. Yeah. Yes, but George Hill was... Like, doing his thing.
But I mean, at least right now, he's coming off the bench in that Ginobili role, basically, because for some reason they're starting Mirotić. I think they should change that eventually.
That is going to be the one wild card that Budenholzer can play at some point, and that'll be a problem.
It'll be a problem. It's just a different matchup.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, for now, like, I'm looking at Norm, I'm looking at Serge, and like, those two guys have had success against the Bucks, especially Norm, but even Serge in that 2017 series. Serge was actually.
I mean, his numbers against the Bucks this year were really good.
Yeah.
So
I just don't know why he's not stepping into those shots. I don't know. Everything with Serge this year, in the playoffs has been a little bit of like overthinking, and in the games he's played really well is like just, you know, being in the flow and just reacting and playing and competing instead of like trying to measure his jump shot.
Well, another factor with that too is that if you look at the regular season, if you look at how Serge performed his best, it was with Kyle Lowry setting him up, because we could both see that Kyle Lowry's higher level playmaker than Fred VanVleet, and Fred and Serge hasn't really worked too well. Mm-hmm. So that's one factor, and then another factor is as well, as you can see in this series, Bledsoe at any moment in time will pick up Kyle Lowry full court, or at least not necessarily pick him up, like, but he'll make Kyle Lowry actually have to have measured dribbles to get it past half court just to mess up the Raptors' offense.
Yeah.
And then Kyle, obviously, with the hand, with the thumb injury, I think it is, he's not necessarily all the way comfortable initiating the offense a lot of times.
Right, right.
So, and Serge is a guy who needs to be set up. He can't set up himself. So that's probably a reason for it, or at least plays a factor.
And I think the funny thing there is, like, you know, you're absolutely right. Like, Kyle and Serge, like, that's a proven formula there. But I also feel like, you know, in terms of the other guy we're talking about the bench, Norm, because Fred is just what it is. I'm hoping they can limit his minutes a little bit, but it's clear the Nurse really trusts him for all the little scrappy hustle plays.
He's got to get a blow every now and again for Kyle.
I mean, they do, but also at the same time, I'm just thinking, like, they're not getting that much, like, production out of the point guard anyway. Like, just why can't you have Norm bring the ball up and just, like, run the offense through Mark or something? But, okay. I mean, like, Norm and Mark, at least the two of them, they've had chemistry. Like, game three, like, they connected in a couple plays where it's just, like, Norm's in the corner, Mark, you know, up top directing traffic, calls for a little, like, split screen, and then, like, throws a great bounce pass, Norm gets to the rim for a layup. Like, I don't see why that couldn't happen more often, you know what I mean? So, I think, and the easy switch there is probably just take Mark out of the game a little bit earlier.
Yep.
Bring Serge in a little bit earlier. Yep. And then you can bring in Mark, you know, to end the first quarter a little bit as well. Because you don't have to just go with, like, 8 minutes of Mark and then 8 minutes of Serge.
Yep.
And then 8 minutes of Mark.
Yep.
And then, you know what I mean? Like, you could kind of split it up a little bit. Like, those two guys are vets. Like, they should be able to play, you know, without much of a runway. Yeah. So
we've watched the Raptors all year. We know the combinations of players at work so far. And so if that means you have to alter the way you sub, but you got to have this team playing at a peak level.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
This is game four or whatever game is feels like a must win going
forward.
Every game's a must win now. So
you're three wins away from the finals.
Exactly.
Like, you got to do what you can.
You got to play the team to their peak levels.
All right, I've been dancing around this. I got to ask you, all right?
Okay.
So first off, I have to stress that Raptors fans, we love Danny Green.
Mm-hmm.
He's had a great year. Kind of really a great bounce back year for him, because a couple of years in San Antonio was a little shaky. One of the most steadiest Raptors. I remember having multiple conversations and with you know, other writers and stuff. I'm just like, going to the playoffs, I trust that Kawhi is going to be there. I trust that Mark's going to be there. And I trust that Danny's going to be there. And the rest of them, I don't really know. And for Danny to take a step back in terms of his production has been kind of just jarring and unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
So can you explain what's going on with Danny?
I'll try my best. I think one of the things that we have to look at, and I've watched every Raptors game, been in the arena for a multitude of them, the substitution pattern very different than what it was in the regular season.
Okay.
If you remember, during the regular season, Danny would play to the 6-minute mark.
Yep.
He'd come out the game, yep. and you pretty much wouldn't see him until like maybe 4 minutes left in the second quarter for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
He'd have a long break.
Yeah.
And then somewhat similar in the third and fourth, but maybe more extended minutes. I still remember there were some games he wouldn't come back to the 3-minute mark in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, yeah.
Obviously, those minutes have widely expanded
now. For sure.
And then if you look at the 76ers series, I mean, because the coaching staff wasn't rolling with Norm, Danny's playing a lot more minutes than he did in the regular season.
Mm-hmm.
He's 31 years old now, so he's not too old. But I imagine that has to – you can't ignore that fact, right?
Yep.
And then you also have to look at the fact that look over the course of the regular season, Pascal Siakam missed one game, right?
Yep.
Danny missed two.
Yeah, I mean, Danny was right there in terms of who actually played all the games. Like, in terms of all the guys that had load management, those are the two guys that did not have any.
Yep. And so I think, and again, he's not
25 like Pascal.
And he's not 25 like Pascal. And I'm not gonna use that as an excuse for him. But it's, how could we ignore it? Especially when you go through a series, as I mentioned, with the 76ers series where the bench wasn't trusted. If you look back at the Magic series, I think he played his defensive adjustment to play DJ Augustine more was
right.
Big difference in how the series went throughout after that.
Huge.
Huge yeah. difference. And then you look at the 76ers series, I think he did a pretty solid job guarding Tobias Harris throughout the majority of the series. He had Jimmy for a while, and that wasn't his best effort. But for the most part, his IQ, defensive IQ is still there.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always termed Danny's performances as, if he plays good defense and he doesn't have any turnovers,
mm-hmm.
then he played a solid game. When he starts to hit threes, then he's having a great game. The 3-pointers have been the one thing that have not fallen down for him,
mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is on him. He just has to hit them. I don't care how many minutes he's played. It doesn't matter. You got to hit.
You're a professional shooter. You got to come in the game anytime. You got to hit that shot.
Exactly. But I also think it's imperative upon him and the coaching staff to put him in a position where he's not just standing in the corner and hitting threes. I think the one problem that maybe people got too excited looking at regular season Danny Green. If you look at it, for the most part, where are most of his threes? In the corner, the ball was swinging, or it was the transition three on the wings.
Exactly.
A lot of that's going to get cut out now because it's playoff time.
Yeah,
if he's just going to stand in the corner, the scouting reporters don't leave him open in the corner.
Yeah.
His guy's just going to stay locked in. That's it. He's not
going to get a shot off.
He's not going to get that shot off. So And Danny's never been the shot-hunting type.
No.
His shots have always come out of ball movement. But I am looking forward to, as he continues to evolve his game into the next phase of his career, I am excited to see him with maybe more ball or shot-hunting actions.
Yeah.
Because if you look at like somebody like J.J. Redick, the plays that they run for him to get his shots off, flare screens, he's getting a lot of attempts up, and they're working to get him a shot. And even if he doesn't end up shooting it, those actions that they run for J.J. Redick lead to so much other stuff for the Sixers.
That's true.
I would love to see Danny get some of that. I mean, obviously, when he's with the Spurs, that hammer play to get him in the corner was something that he almost perfected while he was there. I would like to see more of that being run for him.
Mm-hmm.
But for the most part, it's just going to be upon him to create his own opportunities, which is weird. But we saw in that double overtime, either the double overtime or the second overtime.
I think the first overtime.
First overtime,
the corner three.
Nick Nurse specifically called that play for Danny to shoot the three. And he knocked it down. And obviously confidence is a big thing with any player. Coach called this number. He hit it. So hopefully Nick Nurse gets in the habit of calling more plays for Danny to get him in those attempts. One, for confidence, and two, to actually get him a clean look. Because even if, obviously, some of his shots have been clean, but if it just feels like this is my only clean look of the game, you know, I'd imagine it has to weigh on somebody if you're not consistently getting good looks.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, I mean, 1 for 9, I think, in game 3, but let's face it, I think maybe probably three of those were just end of the shot clock. He had to put it
tough
up. Somebody had to put it up. And I think you might have mentioned this in the pod you did after game 3. Some of those possessions, you might just hope that the Raptors just don't shoot it.
Seriously. Like, oh, man. Yeah, I mean, especially when Fred's running the offense a little bit, because, like, it's just hard for Fred to get, A, where he wants to go, B, any air room to, like, just shoot the ball. And, like, C, like, he's so small almost, like, it looks like he can't even, like, just run the offense and make like a post entry pass.
Mm-hmm.
And so at that point, you're just like, this has been 20 seconds of the dribbling, and then he gets for a high screen and he throws up a shot.
Yep.
And then they miss, and then they go the other way. And I'm like, I'd honestly just hold the ball for 24 seconds and just give the ball back on a dead ball. Like, just set your defense.
Exactly. Rather have the set defense than transition opportunity for the Bucks.
I think, you know, the point you made about Danny is true. Like, you know, like, in that play you're talking about in overtime, like, it's a play where it's not difficult to set up, but, like, Danny's pretty much in the paint, and then he comes around a screen by Mark. And Mark is a really good screener, probably the only really good screener on the Raptors, right? Serge,
big body.
Serge does screen, but, like, there's always a risk of Serge moving. And then there's always Serge, usually he's a scorer, so he wants to slip before anything else. So he's not getting a lot of contact, right? Mark actually does a great screen for Danny on the baseline. And it clips Brogdon to the point where he can't actually fully contest. And Danny's completely confident he can get that shot off without being blocked. So I think that was, like, that's kind of the blueprint. Like, you have to run a couple more actions just to establish Danny, you know, as a threat. Because, again, like, it's tough. You can't just ask a guy to just only play defense, never run, you know, as solid of a vet as Danny is. Like, I'm sure. You got to get the blood flowing. Exactly. And that's why he was like, yo, at least put me on Bledsoe or something so I'm more involved. Because, like, for real, he was, like, kind of invisible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just.
And he loves guarding point guards. I mean, if you look back, he loved guarding Chris Paul. Like, that's. Yep. That's how him and Kawhi used to get down with the Spurs. He would guard the best ball handler, the point guard, and Kawhi would guard the best wing.
Yeah.
That's how they like to do it. And, you know, Danny's best favorite player growing up is Gary Payton.
Wow.
Which is ironically my favorite player growing up too.
Okay.
Man likes to play defense. So get him involved in the game plan. And I tell you, like, it reminded me. At certain points in my life, I've unfortunately been a Knicks fan.
Oh, man.
And I remember when they went to the Eastern Conference Finals, I believe it was, and they played the Pacers, and they put Roy Hibbert, I believe it was, on Amon Shumpert because they didn't believe Amon Shumpert could shoot. Or maybe it was I'm forgetting who it was. Kidd.
Oh, are you talking about the series where Melo got blocked by Roy Hibbert?
Yes, series.
That was the start of Melo's wash.
Yeah.
From that point onward, I like Melo a lot as a guy.
Melo a lot. It's unfortunate. But
sorry, that was my only memory of that series was him getting blocked.
Yep.
Sorry,
but keep going. But Danny's too good of a shooter to let the Bucks get away with Mirotić on him.
Yeah.
But Mirotić is tall.
Yeah.
And Mirotić is not an idiot. If the scout report says don't leave Danny Green in the corner, then you just stay on Danny Green. It's imperative upon Danny and imperative upon the coaching staff to put Danny in action so that Mirotić can't keep up, because he shouldn't be able to keep up.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
And again, you don't have to do a lot of it. Like, I'm just talking about, like, five plays like that where Danny's coming off a screen. Like, as good as Mirotić is, like, let's at least test their communication to see if they can call out the switch, if they can navigate the switch. Or at least test to see if Mirotić can go around a screen. He's kind of big. I'm not sure he can go around the screen. You know? So, Danny, overall, I think the bigger thing I want to talk about was just, like, we've seen Nick Nurse in his first playoff run and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
What's your thought on Nick? Because I think the way he was billed was, last year the Raptors went 59 games. They changed their offense. Mm-hmm. That was mostly Nick. Right, a lot of profiles were written even at the time. Like, Dwayne Casey's the coach of the year, but Nick Nurse made the biggest change to get them to this point where they're number one seed. And I mean, whatever, they still lose to LeBron, but at the time, like, 59 wins, conference, regular season title, like, those were important markers. And I think a lot of that was attributed to Nick sort of implementing this sort of more modern offense. And then the idea was sort of, after Dwayne was fired and Nick got hired, it was like the impression was Nick was going to be this sort of, like, ideas guy, right? He's not really going to be the guy that's going to be motivating the players too much. Like, I could easily see people tuning out Nick Nurse. I'm not going to lie. Sometimes I'm in the press conference, I'm like, he would at least come in with these tremendous ideas. And I think that's always a dangerous spot, because anytime you get a coach, it's like, it's not like this is the first time basketball's being played. You're not bringing too many new ideas to the game.
For sure.
But at least there's an idea that, like, okay, he's going to tinker throughout the regular season. He's going to experiment. And in playoffs, he's going to pull off, X, Y, and Z that he did in game 42 of the regular season, and he's going to surprise some team with it, like a zone defense or something. What's really surprised me with Nick is, like, how, like, much he sort of stuck to his guns in terms of, like, these are my starters, I'm going to ride with these guys. I'm not even saying break up the starting lineups. I'm just saying, like, he sort of stuck with continuity in the playoffs more than I thought he would. And I think I'm just curious to see, like, where were you at with Nick, what the job that he's done and sort of as a playoff coach in terms of pulling out tricks out of the bag. Like, are you happy with the adjustments that he's making so far?
I think it's interesting because when you look at a head coach, there's a certain identifiable things that you could point out to that quote-unquote signify a guy is a good coach or not. Remember mm-hmm. Brad Stevens was getting all this praise because every time they had a play coming out of a timeout, it turned into a bucket, apparently.
Yo, remember when there were, I won't name the national writers, but national writers who earnestly put out a tweet with like a poll of like, would you rather have start a franchise with Brad Stevens or LeBron?
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it was not 100. It was not 100 to 0.
Out of control. I mean, you had people saying, is Brad Stevens better than Greg Popovich? I'm like, what? Is this madness? Yeah, it's hard to it's hard for Nick Nurse because obviously, first of all, the out of timeout plays haven't been as successful, and for whatever reason, the Raptors have had a hard time inbounding the ball in certain possessions.
Seriously,
I don't know what that's about.
Yeah.
I do think he's put in between a hard spot because I feel like there is a lot of pressure to win this year. There is mm-hmm. a lot of pressure to have a good impression on Kawhi.
Yep.
And I think there has been times where Kawhi is so good that he's had to rely on him too much. And he's gone away from some of the things that made – at one point in the season, I think I've said this before, they looked like the Spurs with the ball movement.
Oh, yeah.
And it got cut off for whatever reason throughout these playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see some more – as we've mentioned this before, there's certain things that we know where Kyle and Serge in the pick and roll is something that should be happening a lot more. Like the Fred mm-hmm. and Serge lineup just isn't as good as Kyle and Serge. So why don't you put Fred more with Mark? Yeah. I can't call it. Again, he's in a tough spot. First year head coach with a premier player who's also a free agent.
Yep, not so easy.
He's in a hard spot. But again, I do think we do have to credit him for certain changes, for certain lineups, like his insistence on going big in that Sixers series.
Yeah, that was smart.
Smart thing.
That was a smart move. And it's not the most easy thing to do.
Nope.
Because, I mean, who's playing Pascal at 3 and Kawhi at 2 in the modern NBA, you know?
And I feel like there were some people who might have, like, had some negative comments towards him during the regular season when he tried that out.
I thought it looked like trash every time they did it.
Exactly. Yeah. But it turned out to be fruitful in the end.
That's true.
So you got to give him credit for that. And obviously this insistence now maybe on putting Pascal on a perimeter player instead of Giannis could end up being fruitful as well.
Right.
But again, I just think he's in a tough spot. First year head coach, mm-hmm. franchise player, becoming a free agent, a bunch of guys on the last – about to enter the last years of the deal.
Coaching Kyle Lowry.
You know, and he's coaching Kyle Lowry was a headache.
I mean, he's a headache. I'll write on the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, she's straight up, he's a headache. Yeah. And he knows it. And then he's going against Mike Budenholzer, who had a number of experience coaching his team. Even Brett Brown, even though it was reported that at one point he was going to get fired if they lost Game 7, which is ridiculous, he still has experience with the team.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a whole new team, and they remixed it. And on top of that, OG is not here. And I think OG does prevent them from playing the way that they want to play a lot because he likes to go small. OG's your backup four. He's your backup wing defender.
He's a connector. You can play big. You can play small with OG.
Yep. And I think, and obviously, there's just guys who aren't playing well. But again, I think there's a lot of improvements he could make. I'm sure he would say that himself.
Mm-hmm.
But if they go 2-2 in the series against the Bucks, all is forgotten.
Oh yeah.
Now. But yeah, there are definitely some things that we all think he could have done better.
Yeah,
for sure.
I agree. I'm just a little surprised he wasn't. I thought he'd be a little bit more flexible. Like, for him not to change the starting lineup against change his rotation with the Sixers series. Like, it was clear. You need Mark on Embiid. What are you doing? You know how they sub Embiid is going to be weird. So you got to be weird with your own lineups. And for him to, like, take until game 3 to do it, it was just like, it was just, I don't know.
Yeah, that was, you're totally right. That was painful to watch. I'm so focused on the Bucks series, I forgot about that. But that was probably one of the most frustrating things.
That and Fred. I think Fred has sort of been like I know, like you're not going to realistically play without a backup point guard. But at the same time, if Kyle's going to play 40 minutes, you just need to buy 8 minutes.
Yep.
Kawhi can play some point guard. He's already basically playing point anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Mark, who's a good playmaking center. And you got Norm, who could just physically dribble a basketball. You can get 8 minutes out of there.
Yeah.
At least you don't have to play Fred like... I mean, I feel so bad for Fred, but like there were games where he played 20 minutes and have 0.0 assists as a point guard. Like, that's, I don't even know how that's possible nowadays, right? So
it's madness. Nick Nurse is in a tough spot, and you know it's an elephant in the room. What would have happened in terms of hiring a new head coach if they knew Kawhi was coming.
Yo, because I was going to say, there was a report that came out, I think, 2 days ago, which is, this is old news, right? Because everyone knew the Raptors wanted to hire, well, not wanted to hire outright. There's two kind of versions, but one version is the Raptors wanted to hire Bud, but decided to go to Milwaukee.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another version where the Raptors interviewed Bud and didn't really like him, and then they let him walk. So that is an interesting thing. And as you mentioned, if you had Kawhi in the room on your roster at that point, Bud from San Antonio, who knows Kawhi so well.
And Danny, he probably doesn't and turn Danny, it down.
He's probably like, that's pretty good. Because all things being equal, I think the money was going to be the same. And the situation was just, you know, if the roster is the same talent wise, I'd probably rather stay in Toronto than Milwaukee. Yep. No offense, Milwaukee. I actually had a decent time in Milwaukee.
Yeah, I think
shout out to Vintage Bar. I had a great cash poker game on a Thursday.
Okay,
check out that. But
if I serve Shoreham, that area around the arena is pretty dope too.
Yeah. Although the weird thing is, so the old BMO Bradley Center,
yeah,
they demolished that thing.
Yep.
But it's not finished. Like the demolition.
A little awkward.
So like if you go there during the day, you're breathing in concrete right by the arena.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking, like, you couldn't have done this earlier before the playoffs. Yeah. Like we're about to go to, if the Bucks go to the NBA finals.
Yeah, that's not good optics.
They have like the crowd shots of like the city, you know, of the broadcast. You're gonna have like straight up, it looks like a World War II scene,
yeah,
in there, man.
Yeah.
Because, like, yo, it, like, the, all they have left is like one of the corners of the arena,
mm-hmm,
and like rubble everywhere else.
It's crazy.
It looks honestly like Children of Men in there.
Did you go up to the Sky Lounge, like where you could overlook the city in the arena?
Yeah, yeah.
That was pretty cool.
It is cool. It's a great arena.
It's a great, and you know the Bucks, they have heated seats. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yep, the home team gets heated seats. So like if wow, you next time you go, check out, like they have like little things, oh, under shit, the seat. Yeah, wow. And the visiting team just gets regular normal seats like everybody else.
I'm sure Kawhi will have that heated pad.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
just that
yeah,
huge foam thing that he's sitting on. But yeah, the throne, really. Let's do a quick look ahead to Game 4 before we come around and talk about Inside the Green Room.
Sure.
Okay, so the Bucks are confident going into Game 4, right? And they should be. After losses this season, Milwaukee is like 22-1. Pretty damn good.
Yes.
Chris Middleton even outright said there will be a, quote, guaranteed win tomorrow, which I thought was a slip of the tongue, really. I don't think he was, like, trying to do the Morris brother kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, so that's clearly in Middleton's mind, they're going to win the game. And Brogdon's saying things like, oh, Kawhi's going to wear down eventually. So where are you at with Game 4? Give me a prediction.
I'm going to predict a Game 4 win for the Raptors.
Okay. Okay. Oh, good.
And
good.
I'm going to say that because the Bucks role players played really well in Game 3. And specifically Brogdon and George Hill.
44 points.
I don't know if they could. I doubt they could replicate that,
uh-huh,
right? And even if Giannis plays better, which you have to assume he does.
Yeah, but more than 12 points.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if. I don't. Have we seen a really good Chris Middleton game yet in this series?
Listen, Chris Middleton is. I saw DeMar a lot.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be rude to DeMar's legacy.
Yeah.
But in this case, it's irrelevant. There are certain all-stars, we'll put up all-star numbers in a certain system,
mm-hmm,
that I look at it of. If you take away the easy ones in a playoff series and make them get tough buckets, I'm not sure guys like of that talent can get tough buckets. And Chris Middleton is one of those guys.
There you go. Yeah. I don't necessarily believe Chris Middleton's is gonna look like an all-star in this series.
Yeah, like maybe he gets free for a couple of shots and, you know, he has 30 and we look dumb.
Yep.
But like he's gonna have a contested 30 points and the Raptors kinda know how they wanna play Chris.
There you go. So yeah.
He's got Danny on him. Danny's done a pretty good job. Low-key, Danny's defense in Game 3, I thought, was pretty good.
Yep. Yeah. Again, it's all about, for the most part, with Danny now, it's high IQ, big, and putting your arms up.
Yeah.
And if he hits contested shots, he hits contested shots.
Yeah.
So, I would hope that this is a game where maybe Kawhi gets a little bit more efficient, which is crazy to think that he could still be better.
I mean, he can definitely be better.
Obviously, Danny could shoot better.
Yep.
Fred can shoot better. So if I'm reducing the impact of the role players for the Bucks, I'm increasing the impact for the role players for the Raptors,
mm-hmm,
and I'm counting on Pascal to be better at the free throw line in clutch moments, I would give the Raptors a win. And I think there was a nervous energy in Scotiabank Arena.
Oh, man.
Game 3. It was palpable. Like it was.
I mean, it got to Pascal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think if they can get out to a good start tonight, that crowd will flip. And I think the mindset of the fan base will flip as well. And I think that'll have a positive impact on the team.
Yeah.
So, again, and I'm also just a big fan of speaking positivity into situations.
Okay.
And I'm not necessarily a Raptors fan yet, but I am cheering for the Raptors.
Become don't become one. You're already a Knicks fan. That's enough.
No, I quit that. I quit that a while ago.
Okay, good, good.
The last straw was the Porzingis trade.
I mean, watching Knicks fans turn on Porzingis has been funny. Like when Porzingis got snuffed out in Latvia.
Yeah.
No one has the real story there yet because I don't think there are real reporters in Latvia anymore.
Knicks fans who were doing it.
But like the report of like, yo, there were some Russian Knicks fans that are upset with him. I'm like, this doesn't sound accurate to me. Like, what are you talking about? But anyway, it's been funny to watch Knicks fans flip on a guy. It is real funny.
Yeah, I never got my hopes up. Once KP was done, that was it for me. Yeah. No longer.
When they get KD this summer, you're not back in.
It's funny. I think I'm gotten to the point now where I'm no longer a fan of a team. I'm a fan of the sport now, officially.
Okay. Wow.
Because I wasn't even hurt when they didn't get Zion. When they get the number one pick, I was just like, okay.
I like how people pin all their hopes and dreams on a 14% chance. One in six.
Nutty.
That's not good. Those are not good chances. People are disappointed. Like, oh, I can't believe we didn't. It's like, yo, it's one in six.
Nutty. Can I go on a little rant too real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
There's no reason why the free agency shouldn't come before the draft. There's certain moves that teams would make if they knew they had certain players. In particular, I thought about this in relation to the draft because if the Knicks, with the third pick, took R.J. Barrett, who everybody here knows very well. If they took R.J. Barrett, he doesn't seem like a great fit for, let's say, KD and Kyrie. I would think more of like a 3-and-D type of guy as opposed to a guy who's going to try and score 20, 25. Yeah. But the way they have it set up now, you end up drafting a player who might not fit the team after you do free agency. So I'm not a fan.
Yeah.
That's all. That's my
memory. I agree.
It makes no sense.
Yeah, move that around. Plus, you'll see more trades and stuff at the draft. Because right now you're trading, but you're mostly the trades are for like open up cap room. Yep. Like, that's not exciting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with you there.
Yeah, if you knew what your roster was, then you'd draft differently.
Yeah,
simple as that.
My game for prediction is the Raptors win, but I think probably 95% of the time I predict Raptors win. I still got Bucks and six in the series, which is unfortunate.
Why are you doing that?
Because I'm a Raptors fan, like I told you, all right? Only outsiders to the team can bring this kind of energy. This is why the Raptors made these trades, all right? You don't get a proud vet like Marc Gasol or like Danny Green or Kawhi to necessarily change the roster so much as you just want to change the mentality. Yo, I'm telling you, again, this is not a DeMar Snyder podcast. Like, last year in the playoffs and on the podium, I forgot it was after the game or maybe like shoot around or something, you know, after practice. Someone was asking them how to guard LeBron, which is a tough question. And DeMar said, "Yo, I'll give you any of y'all in this room $100 if you can give me the game plan to guard LeBron."
Yeah,
why would you say that out loud? Why would you say that out loud?
That's not good.
And DeMar is really good with the media. Like, he's got great quotes. He's got great metaphors and stuff. But when he said, "I'll give you guys $100," first off, I need more than $100.
First off.
If I had the secret of guarding LeBron, I should be an NBA head coach and I should be making $10 million a year, not $100.
Not $100.
But regardless. That quote killed me. Yeah. That quote killed me.
Positivity, man, got to reign supreme. Optimism has to reign supreme, man.
Yeah, you're right. Raps and six. Raps and six, guys. All right. Raps are going to win four in a row. It'll be the Bucks won't know what hit them.
And I mean, I've told this to obviously the Bucks are the favorite, but I've said this to almost anybody who's talked to me about this series. The Raptors do have the capability of playing the best defense in the league, and they have the best defensive starting five, which gives them a puncher's chance in any game, any series, because they could lock down almost any team.
And then they have Kawhi to finish it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You have the solutions. You have the solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then lastly, I want to talk about Inside the Green Room. First off, you have quite the history with Danny, going back to high school. Just go back through the history of your days in Long Island, I guess?
Long Island, New York. Yeah. Yes, indeed. So, yeah, Danny and I have known each other through a mutual friend who transferred from his high school to mine. Danny's high school is one of the top high schools, not just in New York, but in the country. He transferred to mine, which is a good high school in New York, but nowhere near good in terms of like in the country.
Right.
So then because of our mutual friend, we became friends, and because I started getting introduced to people like Danny and people that were on his team, I kind of realized that my basketball career was going to be short
Yeah.
And
because you played too.
I played high school ball.
What was your position?
Point guard.
Okay.
Went to the.
Compare your game. Do the NBA comp thing.
Like a very poor shooting, no left hand Gary Payton.
All right. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a little hard to imagine. You got to like if Gary Payton only had one, leg.
Yeah. I talked the trash on Gary Payton. That was for sure. My mom wasn't proud of me, but other than that.
That's good.
Yeah. I actually have beef with Leo Routens, by the way.
Really? All right, air it out. What's the beef?
So Leo Routens' son, Andy, he beat me in my state championship appearance at Jamesville DeWitt High School.
Wow. This is the most obscure beef ever.
No, I have beef with him, for real. And I committed, the game went to double overtime.
Okay.
I played with, I think, six of the guys on my team went to Division One basketball. So we were pretty decent.
Pretty good.
So I was... A.K.A. I was coming off the bench.
Yeah, that's okay. You're Pat Beverly off the bench.
There you go. It went to double overtime. I'll try to make it sweet so I can get back to the podcast story. But
no, sorry. Go ahead.
Went to double overtime. I got inserted into the game. One of our players who ended up going to Fairfield was supposed to come off a double screen, and I was supposed to pass it to him. We were down by four with like 8 seconds, 10 seconds left. We had a chance. And the guy who set the screen from ran down the court, and the guy who was supposed to pass it to was double teamed. We had no timeouts left, so all I could flash back to was Scottie Pippen throwing it off of somebody's back. Blasted reason, the guy who was face guarding the guy I'm supposed to throw it to had a clock in his head, and he magically turned around as I tried to throw it off his back. God. So if you go and look back at the tape, it just looks like I do. It just looks like I threw it straight to this guy's chest to end the game. Shit. It was horrific. Horrific. I didn't play the next year after that.
Wow. That's tough. That's really tough.
Yeah, it was bad.
I mean, it's not all your fault. Like you mentioned, you had no options.
But
it's not like your number one option was, I'm going to throw it off this guy's back.
Yeah, I went down all the options, and that was the best one, and it turned out to be a horrible one at the same time.
Well.
Yes, but going.
But it's on site with Andy Routens.
Yes, on site.
Yeah.
Luckily, I've only seen his pops. I ain't going to pull up on his pops like that.
Oh, you know, Andy was on the Raptors' training camp roster. Like he was never gonna make the team, but he was like a body there. So that was like 2-3 years ago maybe now, and he wore 15 too. The number of players that have worn 15 in Toronto is disrespectful.
Listen, be retired.
That number should be either retired or like at worst you got to be Pascal Siakam to wear that. At worst.
Fair enough.
And there have been a lot of players worse than Pascal Siakam wore 15.
Yep, understood. Back to
you and Danny. Yeah.
Back to the pod. So again, me recognized I was going to be a basketball player. Mm-hmm. I had a couple opportunities in high school to get better at this journalism thing.
Your coach came up to you and was like, listen.
This ain't it for you.
Basketball is it for you, but you gotta talk about it and write about it.
Exactly.
And cover it.
Exactly. I had the opportunity to cover the 2003 NBA draft. It was like my first NBA journalism experience, like the LeBron Wade draft.
It's a pretty good draft.
Yeah, I was credentials for that. And then after that, I just pursued journalism ever since then. Had a couple jobs in the States. Houston, Georgia, Ohio, where I covered a bunch of teams, professional, college, and obviously Danny was doing this thing in the league. And then I had an opportunity most recently after this job in Ohio because they wanted to go in a different direction in terms of like their news and sports coverage. I presented Danny with the podcast.
Yep.
Danny said, cool, let's do it. And ironically, that was before he got traded to the Raptors. It's like 3 days before we agreed to tape it.
It's great timing.
Yeah. And then we were going to tape a pilot just for us to get, you know, rhythm. And next thing you know, it actually turns into the real thing because he gets traded to the Raptors. And Danny was all the way down for making it public. And the rest is pretty much history. But I've known Danny for like 15 years. He's followed my career. I followed his. So there is a natural chemistry that we have. We're able to make fun of each other without getting offended. And we're able to have a good time for the most part. He's getting his reps in, getting my reps in a different realm than I have before. I actually did a podcast when I was in college too, so it was pretty crazy that I'm back doing it again. But
podcasting is an old game, but I feel like now, like, you know, this is like super insider podcast talk, but like you can like advertise it a lot better now, and now all of a sudden it's like, you know, viable as like a actual thing you're doing for work.
I remember the first podcast, I actually helped sell it too. It was pretty cool. I sold it to like a local t-shirt company in college. Gary Bettman was on the show.
Gary Bettman. Wow.
Cornell grad.
Shout out, apparently.
Yeah. Gary Bettman and I think got Alan Houston at one point too. It was pretty cool. Okay. Good times.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's kind of ironic that I'm kind of back here in this same realm.
This is good.
Over a decade later.
No, that's funny. Life comes full circle. And I think, you know, like you and Danny, I think the best podcasts are the ones where, like, you know, like you guys have a rapport outside of the show and you guys can bring a history and sort of like the relationship there could be the construct of the show and of the conversation. It just, it's easier for that to be the case. So, no, you guys have done a great job with it. And it's like, you know, it's just for Raptors fans, again, it's just been great to get insight into the more personal side. Cause like, everyone knows it. Like, it's one thing where you're like in the locker room and like there's like 28 reporters there with their cameras and and then you're just like fresh off a shower and you're like, I'm gonna try to talk to you guys about the game. Like, no, no one's gonna be personal in that situation. But like when they come in, they sit down, like it's just a different mood, it's a different vibe, and I think we've gotten to see a different side of the Raptors. So you know, I appreciate that you guys are doing that right now.
No, I appreciate it, and I love the support that we've been getting from Toronto and from Canada in general. It's been overwhelming, which is a very positive thing. The only thing,
well, how'd you guys end up in Halifax?
They invited us. Some people invited us. They're running they're running a pro-am this summer called Title League.
Okay.
I think what's homie's name that played? Dylan Brooks is going to be playing in it. I think Brooks. Ken Birch is going to be playing in it.
Okay. Okay.
They got a couple guys who are going to play in it this summer, but they invited us out to kind of build some steam for their pro-am. We did it at the Canadian Museum of Immigration, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah. So that was fun. The only thing, though, my only thing I hate about the podcast is that people have this, and I really have to learn how to tune out some trolls on the internet.
Yeah,
maybe I got to talk to you about that, how to do better with this.
Yeah, but so there's a block function on Twitter that's real good. Or just mute. If you feel like you don't want to block someone outright, just mute them, you know what I mean?
There's just some people who have this insistence that Danny's only focused on the podcast, and so that's why he's
Yeah,
like, right. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, are you guys kidding me?
The podcast takes, like, an hour.
Yeah, an hour.
of hour of your day, and it's like they're
an hour max. Like, what? He's not going to spend that extra hour shooting. He's already putting in the work in the gym. Yeah. And Danny doesn't go out or drink or anything like that, he's putting himself in the best position. I mean, goddamn, CJ McCollum does his podcast weekly during the playoffs.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he still does
it. That's wild.
Yeah. But, jeez. You know, yeah. So hopefully Danny hits a couple threes. We could shut people up.
Seriously, it's really stupid. I think the same people are probably the ones listening to the podcast throughout the season being like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, exactly.
And then all of a sudden it's like, no, it's not okay because you missed a couple of shots. It's like, come on. Just be reasonable, people. Let's be reasonable, people. So.
Again, I try to say this to people, like, Danny has a bad game when he's not playing good defense and he has a lot of turnovers. That's a bad game.
Yeah, like when he, like, I thought game one he started dribbling the ball a little bit. And he got tripped by Chris Middleton. He got tripped. It wasn't like he was trying to bust out some, like, crossover and, like, you know, he lost the ball. He got tripped. It wasn't called. It was a bad time in the game.
He should have called timeout, or Nick Nurse should have.
Yeah, he shouldn't have been dribbling in that situation in the first place. Yeah.
Somebody should have came and got the ball. But, yeah, again, if he plays good defense and he doesn't have any turnovers, that's a good, solid game.
Yeah, for sure.
It's when he hits more than, like, two or three threes for who he is, that's a really good game. He hasn't had any really good games. He's had
Game 5, Philly, I thought he was good.
Yes,
that one
go.
Game, that was good. That was great.
For the most part, he's had solid games, but there's a belief that he's this – ultimate, like, three-point shooter, and he just he doesn't get a lot of attempts like you would want to in the playoffs versus the regular season.
Yeah, exactly.
Or the type of attempts
also
that you'd want.
I feel bad when I see Danny in, like, off days and stuff, because he's literally, like, I'm not kidding, like, has, like, 9 joints wrapped in ice. Like, he looks like a mummy out there. He's walking around and it's just like, I hope physically he's gonna hold up, but, like, I mean, look, the playoffs are tough. The playoffs are tough. And I think people are, like, overreacting stuff. It's like, at the end of the day, like, you're in the Eastern Conference Finals. You're playing the Bucks, who are, like, a legitimately great team. Like, you know, there's only so many players that can perform in that situation, even when fully healthy. So
exactly.
You gotta keep your perspective.
Big shout out to Norm Powell for taking up some of Danny's minutes.
Danny played
in that 2-overtime game and only played 30 minutes, which is...
Yeah. And only after Norm fouled out. And that was a bad call because Brooke fully pushed Norm.
Yep.
Anyway, look, we could talk all day, but yeah, Harrison, thanks for coming on the podcast. You guys already know, but listen to Inside the Green Room.
Follow me on Instagram, too.
Shout out to Instagram. Go for it.
It's at High Def Sanford, HIDEF Sanford. You
know,
really,
what can we expect from that? I don't use Instagram, so I don't really know, but what can we expect out of your IG game? Are we getting Serge Ibaka thirst traps or no?
No thirst traps.
Maybe.
Okay.
You know, I'd like to show off the suit game, but you'll get some inspirational hip-hop lyrics to start days from time to time.
Good, good.
Sometimes I might be foolish enough and show what I'm doing in the nightlife of Toronto, showing people around the city my experiences.
Good, man. You got to advertise the city.
You know, I'm being myself as much as I can.
There you go.
Without getting fired.
All right, so follow him on Instagram, on Twitter. I think on Twitter it's just Harris and Sanford, right?
Yes. So see,
On Twitter, you're keeping it professional.
Yeah, and Instagram, I feel like it's an AOL screen name. I got to do a little bit better.
Oh, man. I wish you the best of luck. All right. That's it. That's it for the Raptors Over Everything podcast. I'll be back after tonight's game to recap what is hopefully a win for the Raptors.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
What will be a win for the Raptors, damn it. Positive.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.